Okay. Now, all right, I think we're good. We'll find out. Last week we weren't good. Okay. Shabbat HaChodesh, Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So we're going to talk about the beginning of the months. This is the day of the new year, if you're counting months. So this is the first month of all of the calendar year. And everything counts during the year from the months. Okay, so that's why, so this is a double special day. That's why it's a three Torah day. Because we've got to take care of the sacrifice in the temple for the daily sacrifice, the tamid offering. We've got to take care of the Shabbat offering. We've got to take care of the Rosh Chodesh offering, all three. Okay? So all three offerings would take place in the temple. So if you're going to be looking in the Torah for what offerings in the temple go when, where do you look? No. No. Leviticus 23 tells us about the holidays. But if you want to know about the holiday, what goes on in the temple, you look at Numbers 28 and 29. Okay, so we'll have a special reading today about Rosh Chodesh, about the new moon. Numbers 28 and 20, or it's actually Numbers 28, that will tell us what the offering is for Rosh Chodesh. Now, this is known as Shabbat HaChodesh because it's the month, which Nisan is the month, because it's the first of the month, first of all the months. And there's a Torah portion in Exodus 12 that tells us this is it. This is the first month of all of the months that are counted. So we'll be going to the normal Torah portion, which is this year, Tazria, which we'll be reading from first. Then we will be putting this Torah away. We'll be getting out the next Torah, which we don't have yet. Okay, we'll be opening to Numbers chapter 28, and we will look at the offering made in the temple for Rosh Chodesh, for the new moon. Then we'll put that Torah away, and we'll get out the next Torah that we don't have, and we'll flip back to Exodus chapter 12, and we'll look at the month, the establishment of Nisan, then called Aviv, same month, as the first month of all of the months during the year. So the seasons go off of that. So everything in the synagogue is a commemoration and a recognition of what happened in the temple in temple times. And it's anticipatory of what's going to happen in the temple when it's reestablished. So it is all about the temple being reestablished. Why is the temple being reestablished so important? Why is it so important? Do we really need to be killing small animals? You know, does God, is this what God wants, that we kill small animals? And the answer is, well, yes. Yes. Seems a little cruel until you go to Publix. There's lots of small animals being killed. Right? We just don't see that anymore. We're sort of removed, so we can pretend that it's not the case. But it is the case. So here we have meat that somebody eats. Other than the tamid offering, other than the daily offering in the morning, which is burnt up completely, and Parah Adumah. We just had the Shabbat Parah. We just had the Sabbath of the Red Heifer. That one is burned up completely. Other than those, every single one of the offerings is eaten. Not any different than going to Publix or your local butcher shop and picking up meat to eat. Except that there's a recognition with this of God. This meat is different than the meat at Publix because it is teruma. It is stuff that is dedicated to God. It was stuff dedicated to God in the temple. That's the main difference. So you bring an offering to the temple for whatever reason, and there's lots of different reasons to bring an offering, okay? You personally. And the offering would be slaughtered, the shechita, the blood would be sprinkled, the meat would be roasted or stewed, whatever you'd like, and would be given back to either you or the Kohanim, depending on the offer. And it would be eaten. It would be eaten. The difference between going to Publix and going to the temple is all about God. This is done in recognition and acknowledgement of our sovereign Lord. That's why it's important. That's why it's important. The Passover offering, when we bring the Passover offering on Passover, which is not, by the way, the main offering of the day. It may be the most important, but it's not the most voluminous. The most voluminous offering is the Chagiga, where every child over the age of a school age, six, every child that understood what he was doing, male, had to bring the Chagiga, and it was a lamb or a goat, or and that offering before the Passover lamb. So you brought the Chagiga, and there's lots of roasting meat or stewed or whatever. And then the Passover offering, the Passover lamb, which could only be roasted. And all of these things were things people ate. The difference is that it's dedicated to the temple. So you'd roast the Chagiga, or you'd stew the Chagiga, the festival offering, and you'd bring it home and eat it. You'd do the Passover lamb, and it had to be the last thing that you ate at the meal, and it had to be eaten completely, and the rest of it burned up overnight. Not true with the Chagiga. Yes, true with the Passover lamb. What's different than going to Publix and buying lamb chops? The only difference is, assuming that you're buying kosher slaughtered lamb chops, because that's the most humane way to slaughter meat. The only difference is, even if they do it kosher and you get kosher meat at Publix, the difference is God. One's dedicated to God, right? You get your paycheck. You set aside 10% to give to the synagogue. What's different? What's different about that money? What's qualitatively different about that money? It's God, dedicated to God. Why did we have temple shekels back in the temple days of temple times with temple stuff? We had temple shekels because this was a way that we knew we had dedicated this stuff to God. And maybe we couldn't get to the temple right away, but this stuff is dedicated to God. I can't spend it anywhere else. The only place you could spend temple shekels was at the temple. So you lived in the Galilee, or you lived in Babylon, or you lived in Kansas City. When your first fruits came in, you can't get to the temple. Not right away. The fruits themselves would spoil, right? So what do? You sell the first fruits and you add cash. What do with the cash? You convert it to temple shekels immediately. And guess what? It's gone. It's done. It's temple shekels. The only place you could spend that is the temple. So when you get to the temple, you got your temple shekels, and here's the Bikurim. And you take the shekels, and you put them in a basket, and you go before the priest, and you start with the first fruits, the Bikurim ceremony. My father was an Aramean. And he goes, with the shekels. You know, you pick up the shekel. Not good to eat. Okay, but that's how you could get from wherever, still conform to the temple ceremony and not accidentally spend that money somewhere else. You convert it to temple shekels, you're done. You can't spend that anywhere but in the temple. Right? You're the local apple store. You go to buy the new iPhone and you're using temple shekels. That's, no, we can't take that. You got to use other money. Otherwise, you could take the money that you had gained from selling the Bikurim, selling the first fruits, and it was just money, and you could do anything you want to it. And you had pledged this to the temple. And it looks like all the rest of the money. So guess what? First off, accidents would happen. That money which you had pledged to the temple, maybe you spend it accidentally, because it looks like all the other money. Secondly, not so accidentally. It's a loan. I'll use it. I'll. That's the temple fund, and I'll pay back to it later. Right? Now I'm running short this month, so I'll just take a little. Right? We're human beings. This is the kind of stupid things we do. But if you convert it to temple shekels, you can't do that. That's why the temple shekels were a good idea. Now, what's not a good idea is in the converting to temple shekels that you steal from people. The usury. Because you got to have temple shekels to go into the temple. So you got people over a barrel. So if instead of taking a 3 or 4% commission, you take a 30% commission, no. And Yeshua got mad at that. Not at the temple shekels per se, but the usury, taking advantage of people. Okay, so why all of this focus on the temple? What does the temple represent that isn't here right now? Why are we excited, or why should we be excited that the temple's going to be rebuilt and all of these things are going to happen again? Because the temple being rebuilt is part of the return of our Messiah. Yeshua is going to return when the temple is rebuilt. So the building of the temple is a sign. It's a big deal. We don't know exactly when Yeshua is going to return, but we know the season. And one of the biggest markers of the season is the rebuilding of the temple. And the reason that it's a big deal is because the temple ceremony always points to our Messiah. All of it points to our Messiah. Our dedication of monies, time, effort, prayer through the temple to God. It is Hamakom. It is the place. And this day, Shabbat HaChodesh, the month, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the month of all of the days of the year, point us to the temple, point us to Messiah more than any other day of the year. And that's why this is such a big deal. Shabbat Shalom. Okay, now let's see. Okay, looks like it's registering. So far, so good. That's going to be loud. Tough. Okay. Shabbat HaChodesh. Okay, so this is the month, and the month is very, very important. But we're looking forward to Pesach. Now, all of the children of Israel throughout the world are thinking about things like, ay, gavalt, I got to clean out the house. We got to clean out the shul. We got to get all of the leaven out of our lives. Okay? All of the leaven out of our lives. My shmura matzah, straight from the promised land, Brooklyn, just arrived yesterday. And I don't know if anybody saw Ted Cruz making matzah YouTube, on Facebook. It's pretty cool. He stopped into a matzah bakery where they're feverishly making matzah. And the little kids are watching him, making sure he's doing well. It's very, very cute. So, John chapter 13. We just read John chapter 13, all of it. And I wanted to bring up something very, very specific. Well, there's a couple of things. Let me go ahead into it. Okay, we see here something very, very intriguing and different about the actions of HaSatan. Okay. HaSatan actually enters Judas, Yehuda ben Shimon. Verse 26, Yeshua answered, "It's the one to whom I give this piece of matzah after I dip it in the dish." So he dipped the piece of matzah and gave it to Yehuda ben Shimon from Kriot. As soon as Yehuda took the piece of matzah, the adversary went into him. Now, this is an important piece of information. It gives us an idea that maybe on his own, Yehuda from Kriot, Judas, might not have gone and done what he did. But that what had to happen, had to happen. And so the adversary went into him. Right? I mean, the implication is that he didn't do it on his own. HaSatan went into him. Right? And then as Flip Wilson would say, "Did the devil made me do it." Okay. Except that we know better. We know better. This is more of a figure of speech. Okay? And we had earlier in the chapter, it said that it was already in his heart to do it. It was already in his heart to do it. So at this point, more of a confirmation than anything else that he was going to go do it. Okay? So Yeshua dips the matzah in a dish. Now, I've seen some translations and heard some people talking about sop. Right? How many people have seen sop? Don't want to see sop. Well, gravy. I like gravy. Let me ask you a question. Now, this meal is before Pesach, right? Because Yeshua is killed on Pesach. Right? At the time of the offering of the Paschal Lamb, which is just before sunset on Nisan 14. This is before that, because Yeshua is alive. So is there meat at this meal? Not only does the text never mention anything about meat, we know there couldn't have been, because the main offerings, the Passover offering and the Chagiga, neither one of them had taken place yet. They wouldn't take place until the next day. There's no meat. So if sop is gravy, how can you make gravy? There's not even any meat. And even when they do have the meat on the Seder, how do you make gravy when the meat is roasted at the temple? There's no pan drippings to make gravy. Okay? So it's not pan drippings, it's not gravy, it's none of that. So what is this? What's he dipping a dish? What's he dipping? Wine. Okay? Does wine go in a dish? Only for very, very spoiled puppies. No. What's in a dish? What do we have in a dish? What are the three important aspects of the Seder meal? Bitter herbs. Right? And the matzah. And the Korban Pesach. Those are the three elements that you got to talk about. When your children ask, these are the three things that you talk about. Right? Ma nishtana ha-layla ha-zeh. Why is this night different from all other nights? And we talk about these three elements. Korban Pesach. This is before Pesach. There's no Korban Pesach. So that's not it. And the other two, he's got matzah and he dips in bitter herbs. It's really clear. Now, what do we call this and when did this practice start? Well, the sage Hillel came up with this idea that during the Seder, we actually eat the matzah and the bitter herbs together. Because Torah says, and they ate it, the Karban Pesach, with matzah and bitter herbs. The implication is together. So since the time of Hillel, at the Seder, we were dipping matzah into the bowl of bitter herbs and eating it. This takes place during the Passover Seder. When does it take place? After we've made the blessings for the bitter herbs, after we've made the blessings for the bread and the blessing for matzah, and we've eaten some of each, eat the charoset with it, then you make what's called a Hillel sandwich. That's what we call it today. They didn't call it a Hillel sandwich then. The Earl of Sandwich hadn't been invented. Today we call it a Hillel sandwich. Back then, you eat the matzah with the bitter herbs. So you take a piece of the matzah and you dip it in the dish of the bitter herbs. It's the last thing you do before you eat the festive meal. It's the last thing you do before, and it's called the Hillel sandwich. And then he hands it to Yehuda ben Shimon. Now let's think about the symbolism here for a little bit, because it's way, if you look at this in terms of a Seder, and in terms of a Hillel sandwich, in terms of what actually went on then, this isn't about dipping matzah in gravy. This is something huge. What does matzah represent? When we're looking at the Seder and the life of Yeshua, what does matzah represent? He's told us already. His body. What do bitter herbs represent? Suffering of the Jewish people. So we're taking his body and dipping it in the suffering of the Jewish people, and he hands it to whom? His betrayer. His betrayer. And this is what the Hillel sandwich is. That we understand the suffering of the Messiah in his flesh, and we consume this. Just as he handed it to Yehuda ben Shimon, so we at the Seder can dip our matzah into the bowl of bitter herbs, into the bowl of horseradish, and eat it and remember the suffering of our Master Yeshua for our sake. Shabbat Shalom.